You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown.
Well, for the rest of today's show, we're going to spend our time with a voice that has enriched our lives and called us to be the best of ourselves for over four decades. Here's a cut from his latest CD.
I saw St. Christopher walking downtown on Main, with Black Madonna, fingers holding a flame. I saw an eagle rise right out of the blue. I heard a car crash that reminded me of you. I saw a baby star in South Africa. 2 weeks to cry, the tears rolled down the straw. I saw an orphan give a vagabond cry. Just at that moment, I realized you carry me across this mighty river. You lift me up above the raging sea. You bring me all this love that you deliver, straight to my back porch on the road to Calvary. I've seen a rich man with his bracelets of gold, four cars and a yacht and a mistress, I'm told. Somewhere the restless wind blows out to sea. Somewhere there is a place for you and for me. You carry me across this mighty river. You lift me up above the raging sea. You bring me all this love that you deliver, straight to my back porch on the road to Calvary. Straight to my back porch, Road to Calvary.
Road to Calvary is on Richie Havens' latest CD, Wishing Well. It's his 25th album, and some music critics are saying that the former beatnik, folk singer, and peace activist has turned into a mellower, wiser, and more spiritual person as he's aged. Havens spoke with Peace Watch recently about his CD and his history of political activism.
I think basically my politics, if I have any, is really a common. It's a politic toward the America that is becoming, because basically I grew up in Brooklyn through the 50s as a teenager, and basically it was at that time when my whole generation realized what kind of world we were really in, and that meant for us that America actually had not begun yet. Mm. And that it was still in the becoming. So I'm of the becoming politics.
Have we arrived yet?
Oh, no, not for sure. We haven't. But we have made incredible strides towards it.
Mm. And you've written music over three decades.
Mm-hmm.
Your music has been a part of the movement for social change in America.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess you might articulate it as the becoming of America.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a single event or cause that stands out from all the rest for you?
Well, you know, I think the last and latest, of course, was the marches across the country against our current problems overseas. And I think that was an incredible indication for me as to how far we actually have come. Mm. When grandmothers bring their grandkids and their children to march, having never done it before, we see many families now at least acknowledging to their children the kind of world we actually are in.
Hmm. And so you're speaking of the anti-war movement.
Yes.
Against the war in Iraq.
Yes,
that we're
against
currently
war
in.
Period, hmm. Actually. You know, I think that's what how they radicalized us in the 60s is that we were against the Vietnam War. We were against all wars. It was pro-peace rather than anti-war.
How many anti-war songs have you sung over the years?
Oh, gosh.
What's your favorite?
Oh, gosh. I guess a third of the songs I sing are about that type of unbecoming.
Hmm. And so which one's your favorite?
I don't have a favorite. They all speak about our common problem, and I think that's really what it's about. It's really not about my problem. It's mm-hmm. about all of our problem. And I still have to sing Freedom. I guess I've sung it every day since I sang it at Woodstock.
Yes.
I only tried once not to sing it, and that didn't work.
Now, I know you were the opening act at Woodstock, mm-hmm. and you held the crowd absolutely spellbound for 3 hours. When you were called back for yet another encore, you improvised.
Well, I wish it would. It could have been all of those were encores, mm-hmm. but actually, you know, I was the only one there. On the field, and they were having a very hard time getting any other entertainer there, which is why they kept saying, can you do three more? So I ended up 2 hours and 45 minutes on the stage singing every song I knew.
Well, you're brutally honest, and we appreciate that. But now, what I've read about that moment in history was that was when you were called back to do one more,
mm-hmm.
You used the old spiritual motherless child.
Yes, you know, that too was an unexpected thing for me, because I, you know, if you listen to the record, I play a long intro. It's called Richie Haven Stalling, to try to figure out what are the song there is to sing. That I knew, you know, I sang doo-wop in my earlier life, but I wasn't going to revert to that. So actually, it started with the words freedom, because I was sitting on that stage looking out over at that particular time, which was 560,000 people. That was the first day. Mm. Now, of course, the newspapers said it was only 250 there, but we knew better, mm-hmm. as we always do. And the opportunity to see the freedom that we were all seeking happening right in front of me.
And so how did that song
go? That's how it began.
How does that song go?
Well, it starts off with freedom as the sort of what came out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went into Motherless Child, which I hadn't sung in about 12 years. So that was a big surprise to me as well as the audience. If it was a surprise to them at all, they probably thought I sang it that way. The fact of the matter is, I didn't even realize what I had done, having sung all of my songs, until I saw the movie about a year and a half later. It was from that day on that I had to sing it every day.
Sometimes I feel like a mother and child. Sometimes I feel.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your political influences as a musician and why you chose music as your medium for expression?
Well, you know, I really didn't choose it. It chose me. When I left Brooklyn, I was singing doo-wop songs, the songs of my generation, and writing the songs of my generation, under the understanding that all of the music written in those days were written by young people about the world they were living in, mm-hmm. and the problems they were having, teenagers up. And so when I came to Greenwich Village, I heard a different song. I heard a song about the common us, not just the teenagers us. And how we fit into that was to be able to grow and understand the larger picture.
What about critics who would say music is supposed to be a form of entertainment that people listening generally want to escape from politics and depressing debates and that the two realms should remain separate?
Having been on the road since 1967, I could actually say 4 days a week since I began, every week, all year round. I think I'm living proof that that isn't so. It's all been sold out shows from the beginning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is the people I live with on the planet. They do come out. And I dare say that after 9/11, it was oversold concerts.
Now, is there a particular message? I know Richie Havens, you began as a beatnik, turned folk singer, who enjoyed some stage acting during the 70s. I know the Who's Tommy was a stage performance, and you actually did some films, including Grease Lightning with
mm-hmm.
Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a special message that you're trying to get across to the world?
You know, I don't think it's a special message. I think it's actually the message of the day in all genres of music. And that is that we think deeper about everything we do. We open our ears to those who are doing the rock and roll primal scream of today, which we call rap music. Basically, that music is, in fact, being sung by young people who are under the gun of what they sing about.
Mm.
And so what we fail to realize in the, let's say, radio world, or corporate world, if you will, is that we've always been doing that since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. So the rap music of today is the
Return
folk music.
Of rock and roll's second primal scream.
Several years ago, Mr. Havens, you visited Washington to perform at the Duke Ellington School of the Arts, and I understand that children hold a special place in your heart. Can you tell us about the North Winds Undersea Institute?
Well, the North Wind Undersea Institute started way back in 71 or 2, something like that. It was an attempt to create a hands-on museum for children, the subject matter being the waters we live around, the pollution of our oceans and our rivers and things like that, and how young people could play a part in keeping people who visit the waters they live around from polluting them.
Mm-hmm.
And to have hands-on things to touch and feel that came from under the sea all around the world, and to build exhibits that were sort of consciousness-raising. And it was basically a chance for young people to come to be in the same room and to be able to ask the questions they really wanted to ask.
Mm.
We used to get 30,000 kids a year through there from all the surrounding tri-state area. And basically, it accomplished many things. Right away, our first exhibit was about whaling.
Mm.
And it was such a tremendous thing for my partner and myself, who was a hard hat diver, who had dived all around the world, working under the sea in many, many countries. And basically, it was an education for us. It was just as much an education for him and I,
mm-hmm.
as it was for the young people who got to see the exhibit that was the result of this trek to find out about the whales and how the whaling towns and the whaling people, what kind of approach they were taking about whaling.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what happened was we went to all the whaling towns along the coastline of the northeast corner. And so our exhibit actually became the first exhibit on whaling that was an American viewpoint. It was a big analysis of Yankee whaling,
mm-hmm.
and what it brought to us and to the young people who got to see it was that there was only information about the whalers, how they lived, how they dressed, how they went out and took the Nantucket sleigh ride hooked to a whale,
mm-hmm.
And to bring it back and actually just sell it as products, not just in America, but really exported a lot of the whale oil.
Mm.
And the fact that if it was not for whaling, we would not actually have an America.
Mm.
Because those captains actually became our first Navy.
Mm.
So it was through them that America began to be protected from the British and everyone else by the whaling captains.
It's really exciting to learn that this other side of Richie Havens that most of our audience probably aren't familiar with your knowledge and the work that you did around this institute. Is it fair to say, though, that music is indeed your passion?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I have to say that because, you know, I sang all my life with my friends in doo-wop, and it was in a way a very unnoticed part of our singing as teenagers was that we never got into trouble.
Mm.
That we were able to walk through neighborhoods no one else was able to walk through because we were singers. And there were singers in those neighborhoods, whether they were gang-related or not, who recognized us as singers.
So you were walking through the neighborhood singing?
Well, not necessarily walking through. We did that, too. But basically, we stood on street corners late at night getting water thrown on us sometimes, and down in the subway stations because it had a nice echo, you know. And our goal was to really try to make it somewhere through music.
Mm.
And we did at least win 2 times in a row at the Apollo Theater as amateurs.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Oh, yes, it was for us, for sure.
Did you ever have an occasion to meet Dr. King?
Oh, yes, I had. I actually met him in New York when he spoke in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at a church uptown in Harlem. And he was an incredible person because basically he was a lone person. And you could say the voice crying in the wilderness, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But he basically woke us up to the actual, what you could call the actual skin of the problem, which was, it wasn't just racial. It was an American problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was an American people's problem. If you could imagine that back then, very few people voted, and the winner always won by at least a little bit more than half of the very few. That's why voter registration had to be concentrated on, is because we as Americans really didn't know what powers we actually had. We were kept from knowing that.
You're speaking in past tense, but I think some might argue that that is indeed the case today as well.
Oh, it is. It's still the case. However, I do find in traveling around these last 3 years or so, you know, 4 years or so before even 9/11, that people were becoming conscious of the fact that actually politics is local. And that if you want to make changes in the whole of it, you have to make those changes where you live.
Mm-hmm.
You vote for the guys who live where you live, so that you could have some say in something that you never had a say in before. And the fact of the matter is, what most people don't know, and what I am speaking about a little bit as I sing these days, it comes out when it comes out. But the fact of the matter is, if you are not a citizen of Hawaii, Guam, Guantanamo, the American Samoans and the Virgin, American Virgin Islands, and all of those things, and Puerto Rico, for that matter, that, in fact, you are not a citizen of the United States.
Hmm.
You are only a citizen of your state, period.
Hmm.
And this is true. We don't know that. We're just learning that now, that we are not citizens of the United States of America.
Now, people will say, what do you mean by that?
We are only citizens by constitution of our states. That's why we try to use the word united a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
They are not united, and they never have been.
You're saying we're not American citizens?
No, I'm saying that the United States were never united. So, therefore, it too, the United States is in the becoming of itself.
Hmm.
Once we have laws that reflect across the board the same punishments,
mm-hmm.
then we're closer to
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
America that we're supposed to be having.
Yes.
I am fortunate enough to actually be able to sing the songs I sing that have changed my life. And in believing that I'm no different than any other person here in this nation, that it might in fact help to change others' lives.
Mm.
So for me, it's communication. And information is what my music is about.
Richie Havens, folk singer, songwriter, and veteran peace activist. He continues to inspire and challenge us to be more. We close with Love is Alive, also from his new CD, Wishing Well. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T from the Pattersons, taking the train to Tibet. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Adil Hamid of KPFA, Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Alex Mitchell at WebActive.com for web help. It's your financial support that makes Peace Watch possible, so we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at Pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. To get a copy of this show, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.
My love is alive. My love is alive. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
upsetting me, it's making me crazy. I'll try to keep it together, 'cause what I say may not happen the same way. Now could be forever. My heart is on fire, my soul's like a wheel that's turning. My love is alive, my love is alive, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know it's true, like a wheel.